Yeah, it's Friday night, open lines, whatever you want to talk about, give us a call. Yes, indeed. Now, we've had a little theme develop recently. We're talking about languages and these sort of magical languages, and we're just getting a lot of calls about it. We got another one here, west of the Rockies. Craig from San Jose, welcome to Coast to Coast AM.
Hey, Rob, how you doing?
Good. Now, you've studied Sanskrit, right?
Yes, and I've looked at it through, you know, the guys online that put their tapes online, and you can get into it and study what they say about it.
All right.
And
what's your take?
Well, when you get right down to it, and the philosophy of it is great. I mean, I believe that if we take our mind and put it in any place that is right, rightness comes out of it. I believe that as long as you can forego the dogma of all the other stuff and release all the preconceived notions and allow yourself to become into that oneness with whatever is the universe or whatever, you know, for lack of a better word, with God or whatever. But a lot of the ancient and modern day yogis that are say that Sanskrit was never ever a spoken language, and there are no Sanskrit people. And they said that that language was created to keep the Brahmins into their own sect, to keep the knowledge with them against the masses.
In other words, it was something that only they learned to speak. Interesting.
Also, the great philosopher said Sanskrit was never a spoken language.
Huh.
It was an artificial code language created by the Brahmins, who needed a language unknown to the masses, which in any culture and civilization, I think, when we look at it, I think every society has its secrets that controls the masses. You know, the one Kabir, the great saint of the medieval India, said the language of the masses are flowing water, while Sanskrit is a puddle of stagnant water. You know, and when you learn that, you say, okay, so you kind of, me, I'm one of these guys that pulls everything apart and says, okay, what do I get beneficial from this? Where does it lead me? What does it help me achieve to the good of me and what's around me? And if I can't find value in that, then I have to give it pause. I'm like one of those kind of guys that says, yes, no, maybe, call, you know?
Okay.
But, you know, what works for other people may not work for me.
So you're saying that really wasn't so much like a divine language. It was more created to preserve knowledge and keep it in the hands of those who felt that they should have it.
Right, the power structure.
The power structure, okay.
Right, like Raja Ram Mohan Roy, a great social reformer of the 18th century, said Sanskrit language is so difficult to learn that you will have to give your whole life for it. And even when you would not get much knowledge from it.
Yeah.
And when I look at that and I say, well, they're all studiers and they're all teachers. And, you know, I mean, to that point of where they question the validity of the language itself. And they prefer to speak Hindi because they say they can convey so much more. And so, when you're balancing it out, it's like, well, I'd rather learn Hindi because it puts you back into a better state of mind than something that takes so much to learn. And are you sure you're really, that's what it means?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of question in it. And you know, Rob, as being a meditator, that if you go into good vibes, you're going to get good things. If you're a negative person, you're never going to get good things.
Yeah, you attract the thoughts that you have in your mind, don't you?
Yes, exactly.
Great call. Thanks so much, Craig.
But you know what, Rob?
Yeah.
I just wanted to say this real quick.
Sure.
That last guest you had, and I really love it. You let the guest talk, and I really appreciate that. You're really great at this.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Your last guest was fantastic. But I know a lot of smart people, and yet they have no common sense.
Two different things.
Yes. And, you know, some of the stuff he couldn't explain when you asked him, well, why don't you do this or do that or do that? And he didn't kind of like have the answer for that. But when it came to the real intricate stuff that nobody else knows,
yeah,
it was like he was on it like a detective.
Like
you know?
Yeah.
But I just want to put this to you before I go, is that believe it or not, time and relativity, we are catching up to the past. What we just talked about, we did an hour ago.
Mm.
That's how time works.
Yeah, no, as funny as it sounds, we have a lot to learn about time. Thanks so much, Greg. I really appreciate the phone call. And there's a lot to learn. We're going to go more into the phone calls right after this quick break. Stay right there. Welcome back, Coast to Coast AM. Open lines. Let's dive right back in. East of the Rockies, Lonnie from Newport, North Carolina. Welcome to the show.
Morning, Rob.
Morning.
I'm trying to get through all this, but there's so many subjects again.
I know.
But I'd phoned originally to talk about the gun situation.
Sure.
And I believe that, you know, our military and our police forces, et cetera, will not turn against the public. So I don't really see a need for the assault weapons and multi-capacity clips.
Mm.
As, you know, unless you're going to have them registered some way and have everybody have a background check. But it just, you know, as a group of people, we have 50% of the guns in the world, America does. So if they took the assault weapons away, and we'd still have a lot of guns. And I don't believe, you know, that the authorities will try to. And they might, you know, the government might try to take them away, but I don't believe the military, the police and law enforcement would attempt to take them away. And if they did, what are they going to have?
Yeah, it seems unlikely.
They're going to have a huge civil war.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, it's just such a remote possibility that.
Yeah, and I think it's put out there and talked about so much and from both sides. Well, you know, so that there is an argument and people get afraid and the gun sales goes up and et cetera.
Yeah. Well, you know, the stock of these gun companies is risen 300%.
Right.
In the last year.
It goes up the chain to the banks. And,
yeah.
You know.
So if you bought stocks in guns, the gun manufacturers, you would have done better than if you bought Apple stock.
Or gold.
I mean, it's just crazy. Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
And we have to get off that attitude, you know. It's like people say, you got to love your brothers and everything and mm-hmm. sisters and just forget about all the debate and argument and just try to not only get along but look into the future and what really things are and what the real truth is.
Yeah.
The absolute truth, you know.
Yeah. And definitely, you know, you got to take steps to do what you feel is right, but you know there's a balance that
right.
seems right, and for some people that balance is, you know, having hand grenades and rocket launchers, but I think most people when they buy guns they say, "Well, what do I need realistically?" You know,
right.
if I have a house, you know, okay, a shotgun, that'll pretty much do it.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's rare to take on armed people with, I mean, it's just too many movies. I think people are watching that.
You know, I like Bruce Lee as a philosopher, you know,
oh, sure.
he didn't need a gun. And, you know, if I had been a big gun owner and the neighborhood I live in, the people I see today, and what's going on, you know, would I have used them?
Yeah.
I might have.
Well.
And your guest before was quickly said about the shootings and everything.
Yeah.
That their problem is probably based on the pharmaceuticals they're taking and their personal situation.
You know, we're going to see more and more of it. There's so much toxic, you know, buildup in our food, in our soil, in our water, in our air, in our, you know, electromagnetic radiation, that unfortunately people are just going off the rails every which way.
And I think some of the most important things are never really talked about. You know, overpopulation, I believe, is, you know, is there.
Yeah.
And the Major Ed Dames a few days ago with a quick guest with George on the December 21st, said that, you know, Fukushima, look out for Fukushima.
Oh, I know.
You know, the radiation. I have, I used to live on the Pacific Northwest, and the salmon up there are being, you know, degraded so much, and I believe it's just going to get worse.
Yep. No, I know exactly what you mean. I really hope that people take radiation detectors and scan the milk in supermarkets. Scan, you know, that, because that's always a good indication of radiation. And I hope we can get some really good information on that as far as what's in the air and get the real truth. It's really important that people know about that. Let's go to the wild card line. Zev's been waiting for a while from Marshville, North Carolina. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hi, how you doing, Rob? Thanks for taking my call.
Good, thanks. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks. You know, I was really intrigued by the fact that you started talking about Sanskrit and everything. My original premise for calling was about the gun control thing, mm-hmm. but I have to say I'm actually doing my fourth rereading of the Bhagavad Gita.
Wow.
And fascinating book, fascinating literature. And there is a certain tie-in to this whole gun control thing. Anybody out there who knows the story about responsibility, about standing up, doing the right thing. I mentioned to the call screener that this whole situation with the shooting at the school was pretty much a perfect storm. In other words, there were certain circumstances that came together to create this situation. I am a gun owner, but I don't own assault weapons. I work in law enforcement, and I will tell you for a fact that a lot of law enforcement officers feel like nobody should get involved with what you can and can't buy. Hmm. But at the same time, I would have to say, in conversations that I've had, just to segue into this, is that, you know, you hear lots of talk about the UN and the government's coming for us and this kind of thing. You know, if anybody's gone on YouTube or the military channel or whatever and looked at videos, any kind of entity or government agency that can drop a 2,000-pound bomb from 4 miles up in the air through a window, I don't care how many assault weapons you own, you're not going to stop the government. I think what we need to do is pull back from the emotional wave about this and say, what do we really need to do to ensure the safety? Because if you look back through time and history, you will see that there are individuals who have the horrible will to commit unspeakable acts. And there is nothing that can be done unless somebody on the outside of that individual, family members, friends, neighbors, mm-hmm. can say, what do we need to do? Who do we need to call?
That's the first line of defense, is the people, the closest to the people that are showing signs that they need help.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and there's no one law that can prevent these tragedies. There's no one solution. It's much more involved than that. I mean, we're always looking for the quick answer, but it's really a good, hard think.
There is no quick answer. I had a very long discussion with an individual at work who is a very hardcore weapons owner. And like I said, I own several weapons, but at the same time, I'm not looking to have people in jackboots mark down my street. And I put it to him that way about the 2,000-pound bomb. I said, you know, if we really want to stop this type of situation, we need to come together and realize that until we start looking at the situations with our neighbors, get to know your neighbors, get to know who we are, and understand, you know, this situation up there in Connecticut.
Yeah.
The mother, she bought all those weapons legally.
Yeah.
The son obviously has some developmental disability.
And it's true that nobody could foresee him doing it, but we're all holding on to each other.
Right. And the thing is,
when you let go of someone,
right,
they can fall. And,
right. And the other thing is, I wanted to point out something about our culture.
Sure.
Having, like I said, started my fourth rereading of the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
When you seclude somebody or you allow themselves to become secluded from the rest of humanity, that is probably the key trigger that should draw your attention to the fact that this person is becoming isolated
mm-hmm.
from the rest of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these games that people play, I know that there are many people out there who play these military games every day, and they go out to work, and they don't have a second violent thought in the world. But there are certain folks who this becomes their reality.
Yeah. I appreciate your thoughts on this.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate you taking my call. And like I would say, if I could say anything to the audience out there, if you know of anybody, you know, reach out.
Yep. Good advice. I mean, really, as I say, we're the first line of defense for all this stuff, aren't we? I mean, it really comes down to us. And when I spoke earlier about the show and the influence that it has, I mean, this show is in a lot of ways the first line of defense because we're the ones that are bringing out all this information. And so I want to stress that spreading consciousness, spreading this awakening of knowledge is really, really crucial. Let's go to first time caller line. Tyler, Mississippi, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hi, thanks for having me. My point was I watched this film that came out, I guess about a year and a half ago, called Cave of Forgotten Dreams.
Yes, Werner Herzog.
Yeah, beautiful film. And this cave they discovered 30,000 years ago that had these amazingly beautiful cave paintings, you know, and had been beautiful. And if you look at the drawings, they're just gorgeous.
Yeah. Ancient animals. And yeah.
Sure. And also recently they discovered a kitchen in China, but way before they thought that there was any type of, cooking type culture or anything. Like, I think that there's things go back further than we really have thought.
Oh, absolutely. We're discovering evidence that man has walked on this planet more than 100,000 years ago. It keeps rising to the surface. And mainstream academia, modern archaeology, doesn't want to hear it. So when they find something that upsets the timeline, they stick it in a little box inside the Smithsonian, and you never hear of it again. Don't worry. We're on them. We're going to keep them honest. You're listening to Coast AM. My name is Rob Simone. More of your phone calls right after the break. This is Open Lines. It's Friday night, and we've had an incredible ride. Great phone calls. It's every line is full. And I say we get right back into it. Let's go again. Got to go back to the international line. Great calls. Alex from Toronto. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hi, Rob. Two quick questions. I'll get off the air and let you answer. I found your story very inspiring. You stole all your stuff and you just went around the world and everything.
Yeah.
Just curious, if you could, in a nutshell, what was the spark? What was the moment, the day you actually said, today I'm going to actually do it and sell my stuff and go do this? Actually, that spark, the moment that made you do that.
Okay.
And the other one, if you had heard about 10 years ago, I'm a longtime listener, I spoke to Art Bell, and it was some small town in the States, I don't remember what town, where the whole town vanished. And I saw it on the regular news on TV, and I've never heard it before or since. I can't find anything about it online. Art Bell had heard of it.
Hmm.
He knew nothing either.
Okay. I don't know. I'm looking at Dan Galani. He's shaking his head. So,
and I remember seeing images of police tape. So there was lots of parts of the town were cordoned off.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember an image of a schoolyard, like a kid's schoolyard.
Okay.
And a couple of bicycles, like just left over on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Like abandoned. It's really weird.
Huh. Well, maybe somebody will call in with it.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for your call. To answer your first question, the spark that made me actually didn't sell my stuff. I just gave it away. I would invite people over, and I would make sure that they would leave from something. And so I'd take a painting off the wall. You know, I had all these great Escher paintings. They're all framed, Guernica, antiques, all kinds of things. And I just gave them away, you know, Ethan Allen furniture. And, you know, it was, I don't know if it was a moment, but I spent 2 years researching, where, you know, sort of getting prepared of just getting down to one bag. And I literally lived out of one bag for more than 3 years. And I researched what kind of clothing and shoes. And I wanted to put together an ensemble that I could, you know, crawl through temples in the jungle during the day and then go to a dinner party at night. And I actually found it. I came up with this great Filson, the Filson tin shirt, this really thick shirt and this nylon jacket that looked like a sports coat, but it was practically indestructible. I still have it. And, you know, I was doing very well. I was in the music business. I was a performer and used to sing, and I had all this great gigs and all this stuff, but it wasn't enough. I realized that the real excitement for me was travel and going out into the world. So listening to Coast to Coast and everything, it was just, no, I'm going to get involved in the greatest thing going. To me, it was like, what's the best thing to be involved in? It wasn't politics or anything corporate. It was this search for who we are, our place in a universe, our identity. You know, these are the biggest questions, and I wanted to be part of solving the greatest questions that faced humanity. And since the late 90s, that's what I have dedicated my life to. I've spent all my money and my time researching this and doing this just because I have a thirst for knowledge. And it literally took me around the world. All these different stories, which perhaps I'll get into at some point, are just part and parcel of a desire to learn. And it came out that I have this career in conscious media. So that's my whole trip, is to open the aperture of people's minds, because I know the power of it. And I've seen it firsthand around the world. So I appreciate the phone call. And I'm glad you let me sort of let the folks tell my story a little bit, where I'm coming from. And let's just jump back into this, because I can't resist it. Wildcard line number two, Niv from Midland, Texas. Welcome to Coast to Coast AM.
Good morning, Rob. Hello?
Yeah, how you doing?
Oh, yes. You know, on this fiscal cliff, the people that are solving this problem, like Speaker Boehner,
mm-hmm.
President Obama,
yeah,
Ben Bernanke, these are called under patent law as people of the old art. You know, when the skilled of the old art cannot solve the problem, this is supposed to be solved by inventors. You know, that's the reason for the patent law. Now I've submitted. These I've submitted around 100 posts to the website of Speaker Boehner.
Okay.
You know, like right now on this website, www.americaspeakingout.com, you'll see there are 50 posts which they selected. And
Do you have the radio on in the background?
Hmm.
Oh. Could you turn it down, because we're hearing it?
Okay, I'll put it down.
No, turn the radio down in the background.
Can you wait?
Yeah, please, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll try to get to the bottom of this. I'm not sure. I think he's talking about a website with some posts on it, and he mentioned we need an inventor to fix our problems. Maybe it's about sort of a state of mind, and I agree. The old thinking isn't getting us anywhere.
Yes.
Okay, are you saying that the old thinking in politics, the beltway mentality, is not going to get us anywhere? It's just...
Yes, it won't get anywhere because, look, this 16 trillion that was overspent by President Bush and by President Obama and overprinted by the Federal Reserve, this is my invention. I submitted this disclosure to Representative Jackson way back in 1994.
And what happened?
Told him, if you put the unemployables, these lazy people that you're talking about, if you put the 7,500,000 unemployed to employment, the U.S. GDP will grow at 7% to 8%. And that's what happened in the year 2000. And President G.W. Bush took credit for this. I think President Clinton. But this is not their work. This is my work, you know?
Hmm. Well, you know, this happens all the time. It's called intellectual property theft.
Yes, that's my intellectual.
That's what happened. Well, you know, there are ways in which you can prove that it was your idea. You can hire an attorney, and or you can demonstrate, I don't know, get the message out somehow. Of course, you know, it's hard to get into it just on this limited time on this program. But I certainly do wish you well on that. I mean, my goodness, that would make me so mad. If I had the idea to fix everything and the president took credit for it, sheesh. Although, hey, maybe you can take some solace in the fact that at least they took your idea and it was helping somebody. I don't know. But we are at the fiscal cliff. It's tonight. It already happened. Actually, we went over it. As of now, there is no unemployment benefits. So hopefully before Monday, they will put it all back. We are sliding into the abyss right now. But don't worry. I'm sure the old thinking will get us right back where we were last week or 10 years ago. Who knows? More of your phone calls right after this quick break. Yes, this is Coast to Coast AM, and it's open lines. So let's dive right back into it, shall we? Let's go back to the wild card line. Russell from Tennessee, welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, sir. How are you?
I'm all right. I wanted to talk to you about a dream I had.
Okay.
I've been having it since I was a little kid, at least. I guess you call it a doomsday. It starts off, all you can see is it's really cloudy outside, but it's not from, like, clouds. It's because all the tall buildings and stuff in the cities are, like, completely ablaze. It looks like something like World War III had happened. Buildings are in rubble, windows are blown out, they're all on fire, and it's chaos, and you're seeing bodies all over the place.
Hmm.
And during this dream, it's like you're walking through this city as another person, and it comes, and all of a sudden it switches over to like a third-person view where I can see myself, and I have a hard time sleeping at night because it's so scary.
Hmm.
I can see myself, and I've got these two armed soldiers that are either side of me, and I'm like in handcuffs or some kind of a restraining device, and I've got blood covering me from head to toe. And I'm looking down at this little blonde-headed girl, blue eyes and stuff. She's just crying, and there's two burnt corpses there, and it's like I know they're her parents. You can't make them out, but you can tell that I know they're their parents, but I've never been able to figure out what the dream is, but I've been having it since I was a kid.
Wow. Same thing over and over, huh?
Yeah, every night.
Well, do you have any psychics in your family?
Not that I know of, but there's been times where I've had like a deja vu of stuff. And perfect example, a few years back when that Fort Hood shooting happened, about a couple days before that, I had a friend that was actually staying there. She's an old friend from school, and I had this weird dream, like she had disappeared. Something had happened down at Fort Hood, and I couldn't figure out. Nobody wanted to find out, so I was going around trying to find her. And a couple of days later, I hear about this Fort Hood shooting. And luckily, she or her husband wasn't hurt, but
yeah,
you know, stuff like that. I've had dreams like that all the time, along with this one.
Hmm. So, you know. This reoccurring phenomenon happens to a lot of people, and it's maybe something that's unresolved in yourself. I mean, if you take the sort of the Freudian approach, It could be representative of something within your own life that has yet to be fully looked at. And this dream could be representing that. It could be so. It could be having to do with a relationship, perhaps with your immediate family that sometimes gets triggered by this dream. Or on the sort of more metaphysical side, it could be one of these iconic humanistic dreams where it represents a possible future, and you're just one of these people, you know, like the drop in the ocean that gets this information before it happens. For reasons that we couldn't possibly imagine, perhaps just for this moment where you've shared it with millions of people that can then go on to fulfill its ultimate design, you know, its ultimate purpose. So there's a couple choices right there for you.
Well, it's kind of funny that you talk about something within myself because, it's also since I've been in camp, I've dealt with this like a presence, like a being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first thing I had was in elementary school. My mother was taking me to a psychiatrist, and that's when I first told her about it.
Oh.
It's been with me since I was a kid as well.
Right.
And, you know, I've gotten into more, like, I actually talk to it. I can actually talk to whatever this thing is.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out she's a girl. But she's been with me since I was a kid. And it's kind of like a yin and yang thing. And she tries to control my darker side so I don't go off into the darker side, you know?
Well, you know, Freud would say that it represents something, you know? And I would say get closer to it. Talk to it. You know, look at, you know, envision this child in your mind. And before you go to sleep, here's another suggestion. Start to think about this girl, bring her into your mind, and then try to actually talk to her next time. Carry the dream even more forward, and you might get some answers. I know it works for me. When I had a reoccurring dream about someone in my life that died, and I would see them, and it would be very upsetting, but I worked through it to the point where I didn't get so upset, and I actually got to the point where I hugged this person, and I didn't have any more dreams. It actually does work. Put your mind to it. You can really control where you go at night through just very centered thinking before you go to sleep. It hopefully helps, and definitely also helps to talk about it. All right, let's keep rocking and rolling here. Let's go to wildcard line number 2. Andrew from Riverside, California. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good.
What's going on?
What I was going to bring tonight, a couple people came on the air, and they don't know why their rights are being taken away.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I study the judicial system, and people need to do their homework. And let me quote some or tell you some laws real quick.
Sure.
Maybe people can look them up, and they can do their own due diligence.
Yeah, drop some knowledge on us.
All right, 49th Statute 3097, Treaty Series 881. December 26, 1933. That's where Congress replaced statutes with international law, placing all states under international law. 1945, the International Organization Immunities Act, December 9th, relinquished every public office of the United States to the UN. Title 22, United States Code Chapter 11, is Foreign Relations and Intercourse. It identifies all public officials as foreign agents.
Wow.
Title 22, CFR 92.12 to 92, or 92.11, 92.31, that's where the oath of office comes in. That is, it tells them how they're to take their oath of office. Title 5, 3,331 of the United States Code says how that oath of office is to be taken, where they say, you know, I swear to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. And under Title 8, United States Code 1481, that's where when they take an oath or an affirmation, they relinquish their natural citizenship to the United States and take on the 14th Amendment citizen, which is your federal citizenship. And that's under 54 Stat 670, the Alien Registration Act of 1940, June 29th.
Wow. Okay, so what ties all these together, in your opinion?
Well, all of our public offices are foreign to us.
Hmm.
You get it?
I'm seeing the thread.
That's why they have foreign sovereign immunities.
Uh-huh. So what level of office do you have to get into before this takes effect? Is it just the Senate or the House?
It's any public office. See, when they take that oath,
when their office is done, they become a regular citizen like us.
Hmm.
While they're in their office, they're not, they're UN.
Hmm. So how come, if these laws have been enforced for so long, we haven't seen a real increased presence of the UN on U.S. soil?
Why did Hillary Clinton, after the shooting in Arizona, why did she go to the UN to ban handguns?
I don't know. Why did she?
It's, I mean, if you look at, like, our money system,
okay,
right, if you go into the 1913 Federal Reserve Act, Section 16, it says that the Federal Reserve note is for the Federal Reserve agents and the bankers. It's not for us. It's a bank note. It's internal currency.
So you think the strings are being pulled by the UN? Like, it's like the U.S. is like kind of like a puppet.
Well, we're a puppet, yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Well, what can we do to stop it? What do you think the best course of action is?
Well, for people to get involved, to bring in federal lawsuits. I mean, see, when they take an oath of office, they're there to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. When they don't do it, they're advocating the overthrow of our government.
So even without realizing it, they're part of
this. They're part of the system.
Uh-huh. Huh. How did you become aware of these specific laws?
I do a lot of studying, and there's a guy that does, he teaches over the internet. His name is Rod Class.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically education on the judicial system.
Mm.
And you go through the laws, you read it with him, and he explains it. And you do your own homework. You do your own diligence. You never believe anything anyone says until you do your own homework and you verify it.
There you go. I agree with that. Well, I'm always interested in this admiralty law. You know, the flag.
It's not admiralty. It's all administrative. See, public law, it's public law 1, 48 stat 1. C1 is where the president gave authority to the agencies to regulate.
Mm.
That's where your agencies, your police department, I mean, you could name the whole alphabet.
Yeah.
CHP, all at their agencies.
All right.
When they bring you in, it's an administrative court.
I appreciate that. That is something that I haven't heard in quite that concise of way. Well, you gave us the information. People will look it up, and we're just out of time. This has been an incredible show. Thank you so much, my guest, Christopher Michael Langan, and thank you all for calling in. My name is Rob Simone, filling in for George Norrie. We'll see you next time right here on Coast to Coast AM.